Now, across the Muslim world, women are demanding major reforms to Islamic laws that govern marriage and divorce. In India, for example, they've succeeded in banning the so-called triple talaq, which allows a husband to abandon his wife by simply saying three times, "I divorce you." In Tunisia, the government is set to change the law to allow Muslim women to marry non-Muslim men. At a major conference of Muslim women in Sydney this week, one of Canada's leading legal experts, Professor Julie McFarlane, will present her findings on the role of Islamic law in marriage disputes.
Well, I found a parallel informal dispute resolution system which operated pretty actively among Muslim communities, not just in Canada, but in the United States as well. Similar to the kinds of parallel informal systems that we see in other religious groups, amongst Jewish people, for example. And that system provided a additional ceremony known as the nikah for marriage for Muslim people, and also a process for divorce, which would undo the nikah. What I found that was really surprising was that this was not a system that was only adopted by people who attended the mosque. In fact, the imams would complain to me that the first time they often saw people was when they were asking them for a divorce. They'd never seen them at prayers. Right. So it was just very interesting to see how important this parallel system was. It's not a substitute. All these people got a legal divorce as well.
Civil divorce.
Exactly. But there was a process or a ritual in this that was important for them to express to their families and their communities that they had had a sanction for divorce.
Yeah. You interviewed, I think, about 200 Canadian Muslim men and women.
And American.
What were the reasons that many of the women gave for wanting a divorce, especially those who may have not had an Islamic marriage?
Pretty much every single person I interviewed had had a nikah. I hadn't realized how widespread that was amongst second and third generation professional self-identifying secular Muslims still have a nikah. There were 2% or something hadn't had a nikah. But what they wanted to do was to find some sense of closure on their marriage and meet the expectations often of their families, and to be able to move on to at least contemplate another relationship. One of the things that was so fascinating was I talked with professional, highly educated, secular Muslim women who still felt that if they hadn't gone to the imam and they hadn't had some sort of release from that nikah, that they wouldn't have a sense of closure. And in fact, some of them didn't, because some of them couldn't find an imam who would give them blessing, if you like, for a divorce. And they went on and got a civil divorce only, but continued to feel that they hadn't had a real sense of closure.
It's fascinating the work that you did, because if many of the women weren't especially pious, why did a matter of closure, in inverted commas, why did it matter to them so much?
The best explanation I can give you is that it is very common amongst people who are divorcing, and it was very common amongst this sample also, for people to feel like they had done as good a job as they could have of both their marriage, which they're now giving up on, and the divorce process. And that might be, for some people, modeling a very cooperative divorce process in order that their children could see that they could still work together. Or it might be something that engaged a ritual, like people in the Jewish community go through a similar ritual of the get, or in this case, some sort of sanction from the imam. So I think that when we go through very hard life transitions, we're all looking at what are sometimes called our sources of significance. We're trying to do the best and look as good as we can look to our family, to our community. And so I think this is very much about people's sense of personal integrity.
Yeah. What about Muslim women who didn't want a divorce and it was effectively decreed by their husbands, for whom it's a lot easier to get a divorce?
It is. And there is a fundamental asymmetry where a woman has to ask for permission and a man can simply pronounce. And that is a clear asymmetry. And that asymmetry does produce some very heartbreaking situations. And certainly I talked to women who had been divorced by their husbands by them simply leaving. And the question then became for them, I mean, they were always very pragmatic about how they dealt with the next steps was trying to ensure that they could put together a financial future for their children and how they could engage their imam in trying to negotiate that peace. Now, they all also went through the courts and many of them obtained orders for spousal and child support. But they also often tried to engage the imam in a process of negotiation with their husband, sometimes successfully, often unsuccessfully.
I was going to ask, I mean, how sympathetic were many of the imams to the women who didn't want the divorce?
Right, this was a huge spectrum, both in terms of how sympathetic were they to women who did and didn't want divorce. There was an enormous spectrum of attitudes. And, you know, the sort of key difference amongst them, I felt, was their attitudes towards the role of women in the family and the role of women in society. Those who had a more, let's say, modern perspective were far more sympathetic to women who wanted divorces and also much more likely to be proactive where there was a talaq, in other words, where the man had simply pronounced divorce.
Yeah. India recently outlawed the so-called triple talaq.
Yes.
I know that your purpose here was not to recommend legal changes, but I'm wondering, given the widespread research that you did, do you think that's something that could be considered?
Absolutely. I mean,
this is the outlawing the triple talaq, where the man simply declares three times, "I divorce you," and it's done.
Yes. We're starting to see modern Islamic states do this because I had a very clear message from all of the imams that I talked to that they disapproved the triple talaq. Now, of course, in Canada and the United States, this is not part of a legal system, so we can't talk about legal reforms. But I think that what tends to happen is an informal system, just as the same system exists in Australia for Australian Muslims, tend to get affected by changes in their countries of origin. So as we see countries with Muslim legal systems move towards outlawing the triple talaq, I think we're going to see increasingly discouragement and hopefully elimination of this amongst the community at an informal level.
Just finally, Julie, is there a problem or a challenge with polygamous marriage in elements of the Muslim community in Canada?
I did come across some polygamous marriages. It was a small number. And the imams, they were reticent about acknowledging it, but generally were aware that this did take place. Just like the triple talaq, it's something that the community leaders and certainly the modern imams are discouraging. But it certainly is there. And of course, that also creates problems because that means that there are no legal rights for children in a second so-called marriage.
Yeah. How do the Muslim women, especially those who may be in a polygamous marriage, feel about it?
Well, the only women who had had this experience of polygamy were women whose husbands had decided that because the nikah did not ban them from taking a second wife, that they would go ahead and do so. And in each case, these women were now seeking a divorce from their husbands. They were a small group, but almost all of them talked about how they wished that they had put a clause into their nikah, which sometimes is done now, that very explicitly says the husband will not take a second wife. And, you know, it was very sad because they had all believed that this simply wouldn't happen and were very shocked when it did and were looking for a divorce.
Well, great to talk to you, Dr. Julie McFarlane. She's Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Windsor in Canada, and she's in Australia to address a major conference of Muslim women. Thank you for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much, Andrew.